Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Greg for that news update. There'll be more news with Mr. Host at 7 o'clock. You're tuning to the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we're going to be taking a look at Zeda results. Zeda Limited provided us with a year-end update on their performance for the financial year that was. We're going to get a sense of that performance with the Chief Executive Officer. And then we're also going to take a look at the latest home financing solution from a solar perspective from the team at Luxi. We're going to chat to them and see what it is that they've rolled out into the market. Then we have a conversation with the Chief Executive Officer of Intercape around the ongoing tensions between the taxi industry and the bus industry where it relates to long service trips. We're going to get a sense of what those developments look like today and if we have seen any improvements from that perspective. And then because it's Tuesday, we've got an agri feature. We're going to be taking a look at a globally recognized vineyard in South Africa that recently won or recently ranked amongst the top 10 rather of globally recognized wineries and vineyards in the world.
We can stay here, stick with what worked before, keep our eye on that one spot, steadfast. Or we can recognize that the only constant is change. At 91, we believe that with change comes opportunity. That's why we have 250 investment professionals in the world's investment hubs actively seeking opportunities for you, wherever in the world they may be. Isn't it time to change how you see investing? Invest offshore with 91. 91. Investing for a world of change. 91 is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
We kick off the show with a sense of market movements throughout the day and get a sense of what's been moving some of these decisions. I'm joined on the line by portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, Nick Kunz, to see what we make of market movements. Nick, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. This time of the year, 17 Rand 25 against the US dollar. Did you think you'd see this level? Did we think that this is how the Rand would be performing as we kind of wrap up the year?
Evening, Jimmy. Nice to be on as always. Quick answer, no. And you've got to sometimes take these wins when you get them. And I must tell you, 30-odd years of being in this business, you know, forecasting the Rand dollar is like the world's worst job. I don't think anyone's ever got it right. It's like the graveyard shift on your first job. But nevertheless, you know, and almost it, not just the weaker dollar. Yes, the weaker dollar has been a disaster. It's down about 10%, I think, on the basket or 9% on the basket of a Dixie this year. But also Rand strength. And I think gaining a little bit of momentum, you know, coming off the grey listing, you know, certainly well-received G20, the naysayers. I think it was very, very well-received. It put SA in quite a good image as well, and a couple of other sort of early goals as well, and getting a little bit of momentum. So Eskom, and we can go on and on about it. But, you know, all of those little wins put together contributing to, you know, a stronger currency, which it is, whether you like it or not. The currency is a barometer of a country. And I think it looks pretty good, and it's telling us that things are doing okay.
How okay are we at the moment, Nick? I mean, the markets have been volatile throughout the year. Investors have been looking for returns. We've seen some unprecedented returns on the equity side, and we'll get into those in a moment. But from a risk premium perspective, now that we've gotten the grey listing conversation behind us, we've gotten that all-important ratings upgrade by Standard & Poor's, even though we're still in junk status, how is the country risk premium looking at the moment?
I guess you've got to compare apples with apples, right? So, I mean, look at the emerging market basket. So on a comparative basis, we look a lot better than some. We're not great. I mean, we all know the fiscal position in South Africa, debt to GDP is still a little bit concerning. We all know about the narrow tax base. You know, those are all the stuff we do know. What I can tell you is we've got a fiercely independent South African Reserve Bank. Unfortunately, a little bit too hawkish than some of us would like. You know, we wish rates were lower. But nevertheless, that real rate rate does play into the hands of foreign investors. It's a very attractive yield. That carry trade is very alive and well. And if we have to actually look in that emerging market space, you know, we do not have traditionally a lot of dollar denominated yet. We do have a lot of debt in our own currency, which is a good thing. I think it's only about 8 or 9% outstanding in dollar denominated debt. So that also playing in our thing. So on a relative basis, we don't look so bad. The problem arises, though, is that when you do have this risk on, risk off theme, and it's been a choppy market the last couple of weeks, you can see it. You know, the Rand and SA tends to flow with that risk on and risk off. So, you know, if the world falls over tomorrow, you know, we're not going to escape and we're going to fall down as well. But overall, again, I say, you know, we look okay. And you know, we're coming off a very, very low base. And I would argue that there's still more room to roof to the upside.
Nick, let's look at those equity markets. Is there room to the upside on those markets? They have run really hot throughout the year. We've hit record levels on multiple occasions locally. We've had really good international markets. Have they run to their limits, or are we still going to see something perhaps from the infamous Santa rally that we're expecting?
No, so let's look at the local aspect. Year to date, JSE All Share 31% up. I mean, I have to sort of rub my eyes and make sure that's right.
But check that figure again.
But yeah, but you know, the better part of 10 years, you know, we haven't participated in that emerging market rally for all the reasons that we know. And yes, we've had a great, fantastic year. It is reasonably narrow, I will say that. You know, recently it has just been the gold shares, and I made a large portion of that run, and the platinum shares. The rest of the market, and we can probably touch on some of the local earnings in a second, but, you know, they're actually doing okay. You know, they're starting to sort of carry their weight and starting to sort of, I think the rally is a little bit broader in SA, so I do think there's more room to move. Offshore, question marks, I'm not sure. Very choppy, very volatile. I see Nvidia down about 7% as we speak. You know, is it risk on, risk off? You know, the AI trade is either on or off from one day to the next. Valuations in the States do remain elevated, let's say it that way. Historically, they are expensive. And Europe's also, we still got, you know, issues in Europe. Europe's still battling to grow. It's still battling to get their act together. We've still got problems with Russia and Ukraine. So, yes, there is a lot of causes for concern. But I get the feeling, as I've been watching this for a long time, these markets, I get the feeling we're late in the cycle. But, I mean, I don't think we're ready to call it top just yet.
What about the commodity side of things, Nick? Gold price also running new record highs, levels we have never seen in the history of the gold price. At the same time, you're getting moderated crude oil prices that kind of seem to be on the lower end of, I would imagine, what OPEC has as an ideal range. How is that shaping up, and are we kind of done for the year with regards to the gold price?
So gold price is difficult. I mean, again, like the rand dollar, so difficult to forecast. But I can understand and I can advocate why an investor should have some gold in their portfolio in the long term as a hedge against a devaluing dollar, as a hedge against just the what if in case things go bad. You can do that. Would I chase the gold price now? It seems a little bit rich this side of 4,000, but I do think it can stay here for a while. That's the one side of it. Oil price, that's a double-edged sword, and I think we've spoken about oil before. It's a tricky one, because the one side, you need a low oil price because that is your inflationary concern, especially for places like South Africa and other emerging markets. We import all that energy, so we import all that inflation. So we want a lower oil price, which is a good thing. But the other side of that argument is, you touched on OPEC. OPEC do not want to see a lower oil price, and they will probably turn the taps off at some point. But the lower oil price also tells you that things are slowing. And that is also sometimes a little bit of a warning sign when you do get a low oil price. I saw a low tide yesterday, I think JP Morgan or Morgan Stanley talking about somewhere around the mid-50s oil, which is probably where I think it's going to settle. But that again is telling you a story that the world is starting to slow a little bit after what has been, I guess, a decade and a bit of an unprecedented bull run we've had.
Nick, let's look at some of those local earnings numbers that you mentioned. Pepkor Group giving us an update this today around their year. What do you make of those numbers and some of the other announcements related to the Pepkor business?
Yeah, interesting, wasn't it? I mean, when the first story broke and they spoke about going into sort of the mass market banking and the discount banking area and a few other things, and on the face of it, a solid set of numbers. You know, if I looked at what their sort of Informa Market platform, which is one of their fintech sort of good stories. You know, up 20 odd, I think 23, 24%. Again, all those numbers are really, really good, but. The share price was up initially and it actually ended up flat on the day. And I wonder if it's more just a realization that despite their really strong footprint, you know, it's a competitive space, that banking. I mean, we only had recently, we've had Tyme Bank, Discovery Bank, I think Bank Zero, and I think Old Mutual's the next one, I think OM Bank, I think they're calling it. They're also coming to the mass market. So, goodness me, it is a very competitive and crowded space. But this is a very well-run business and, you know, I would back management to get it right, actually.
That footprint is quite impressive with more than 6,000 stores across their entire group. Nick, going into the final month of the year, typically a shorter month, typically very lower levels of volatility, or at least asset managers such as yourself winding down positions if you haven't already, in anticipation of a year-end break. Do we see that happening this year? I mean, nothing has really followed the typical rules of markets over the
Rip
last
up the
years.
rule book.
Yeah, this year we've just thrown the rule book out the window. We've decided we're not going to use it. How do you kind of see the last month playing out?
I suspect, I mean, I'll gravitate more you know, that Santa Claus rally you mentioned. I think we do sort of melt up or grind higher, whatever terminology you want to use, into year end. You know, again, you're not, everyone's talking about possibly markets, you know, having a crash, recessions, it's all too high, it's all run too fast. My experience, it doesn't happen when everyone's talking about it. It comes when you least expect it. And right now, you need a probably a credit event or some sort of big liquidity event to trigger something like that. I don't see that on the horizon just yet. Again, valuations are expensive. Yes, we know it is. But right now, I see that continuation. Next year, I don't know, all bets might be off. But for now, you know, I think we grind higher into December. Crystal ball stuff, there we go.
I wanted to put you on the spot for next year because if valuations are stretched, surely that means that at some point there must be a market correction, a market retracement, and we don't really know how deep that correction could be. But what does that mean for valuations next year? Because if we didn't, I suppose it could also be argued that we didn't know where we were going to find the returns this year, and so therefore next year could be very much the same.
And this is where it does get quite tricky because a lot of the heavy lifting is certainly look at the States. I mean, you've got the Magnificent Seven making up a significant portion of the S&P 500 doing all the sort of heavy lifting. Now, if they retrace, which inevitably they do, you know, one thing I can tell you about bubbles is, which we are, whether you like or not, we're in an AI bubble in a lot of aspects. Bubbles do ultimately sort of deflate. And markets do sort of retrace back to their long-term mean. So the question I've got for next year, Jimmy, and I don't know if I've got the answer right, is, you know, is this, will we get a correction next year into a broader bull market, or do we actually get a correction and there is no bounce? I'm not sure, but maybe leaning more towards the latter. Interest rates are topping out. The Fed is going to cut rates, so we are having a rate cutting cycle, so that is typically positive for bull markets. But again, it might, what you might find next year is it's more of a stock picker's market. And interesting today, interesting moves today. If you look at some of the drill down a little bit, and if you look under the hood, what's happening in the States, you're getting the NASDAQ down 0.5% and the Russell 2000, which is the small cap US market, top 2000 shares in the US, the smaller caps, they're actually up 1%. So maybe that's a healthy, I guess, sort of a rotation out of the expensive into the more value, but I don't know, time will tell.
One of these days, you and I, Nick, are going to have a conversation around what it is that we do when the Magnificent Seven disappear and how we find returns. But for now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thank you so much for the time, as always, and for the insights. Nick Kunz, Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, joining us to share his thoughts around market movements, market expectations, and whether or not the year is done providing returns.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise, and you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Zeda Limited released their annual results at 7:30 this morning to the market. A sense of the performance, revenues were up about 1.7%, gross profits increased 3.9%, headline earnings per share increased by about 15.7%. For more on these numbers and the overall performance of the company, I'm joined on the line by Zeda's Group CEO, Me Ramasela Ganda, to take a look at this and get a sense of the performance. Me Ganda, always lovely catching up with you, especially at this time of the year. Your initial thoughts and reflections on the year that was for the business?
Thank you very much for having me this afternoon. Very exciting period that we're in. The year that was mixed with very challenging things. The year where we saw tariffs on our vehicles and different industry. Countries like Lesotho, where donor funding was taken away. But at the end, you know, with our operating model and diversified portfolio of rental, leasing and car rental, we saw under our brand of Avis and Budget Group, Zeda did exceptionally well, where we really decided, you know, at this point, even the shareholders, you know, we give them a good return, and we did a 50% dividend declaration. So very exciting. Our debt has come down significantly, is more diversified. So a very exciting overall 2025.
Maganda, each year when you and I catch up around the numbers, there's always a sense that the economic conditions under which you operate require you to be almost on top of your game throughout the year because of the challenges that throw themselves your way. Given that you now also operate in multiple jurisdictions, not just in South Africa, how are you finding the markets at the moment, the South African market and your other markets where you have operations?
I think the good thing about that statement is that we've built resilient and muscle to be able to go to different places. I mean, we've seen the South African economy with, you know, challenging and, you know, sort of sluggish growth. But then we've got other countries like Zambia, where, and even Ghana, you know, the growth has been very impressive. Lesotho has been doing well despite all the challenges that, you know, the automotive sector have encountered with the tariffs. I think one thing we've built over the period is that whether we're in South Africa or as we our strategy, we're expanding into, you know, the entire continent, we're very clear that it's never going to be a break for us. It's always going to require agility, adaptability and proactive planning from all angles. So we are geared for it and ready for it. I think we've built that muscle very strong.
Maganda, I want to take a look at the operations, or at least the other aspects of the business. You touched on the fact that the business has the car rental business, you've got the leasing business, you've got different operations within the overall group structure. How are you faring against your competitors at the moment in the market? Are you finding that perhaps some of that resilience that Zeda's been able to implement puts you at a slight advantage in times where markets might be a bit difficult?
You know, when you look at the business, being a leader does come with its challenges, and I think we encounter that. I mean, price become very stiff and competitive when you look at short-term rental. The economies are really forcing people to say, you know, you can't spend on this product and can't spend on rent a car. So that has been quite challenging, especially when we see with inbound. And one of the interesting things that we're seeing with so much price pressure on the inbound business, you know, one cannot wonder that there might be some AI really pushing the prices down. So it is quite challenging. Ours is to remain on top of the game and give the comprehensive and seamless quality of customer experience. But does that make it even more difficult for us? For sure. We offer quality, and Avis brand and the Budget brand are premium. And in this market where, you know, cash flow is really under pressure, customers are really strained for cash. And we look for product like subscription. We took advantage of it to say, you know, we can give a subscription which is priced differently. It offered different services, but we then don't compromise on the quality of service that we offer. And we've seen that the subscription has really penetrated the market very well. And I'm very excited about it.
Maganda, let's take a look at the performance of the balance sheet. I mean, net debt holding steady within the acceptable bands and within the acceptable margins. It's important to use debt wisely, I suppose, in an environment where you ultimately are responsible for it. But you also do still want to return invested capital to shareholders as well. So that seems to be well above your weighted average cost of capital and what your desire is there. How are you striking that balance? How are you balancing deployment of capital, but also ensuring that the allocation of that capital is strategic enough to give you a good return?
And it's all about that. The capital allocation is where we get the good return. You know, our assessment is so intense. We buy asset every time. We buy fleet every day. You know, for other people, you know, the assessment of investment is once a day or once for us or once a year. For us, it's the regular game. So whether we deploy the capital in the business or we give the return to the shareholder, it's always a critical stage as to saying, do we have enough capital? Do we have enough cash to be able to return? The one thing, you know, that is really telling in our business, because we generate strong equity, since we started listing, we listed with an equity of 1.7, you know, 3 years down the line, we have doubled that we generate equity. And before today, you know, with no M&A on our table, it really made our balance sheet very weak to say, like, we have a lazy balance sheet and that we needed to really work on it. And hence, we've given the shareholders back, you know, 50% of our earnings, but gearing ourselves for the growth. And even post the dividend declaration, we're sitting with strong equity that will enable us to continue to grow. We will grow with equity and debt, but mostly with debt.
How does the M&A pipeline look at the moment from an opportunity perspective? Because the new car market hasn't exactly been forthcoming with opportunities, and it has experienced some downward pressures that would have undoubtedly affected the business. How has that then affected how you're positioning perhaps your M&A opportunities or even the opportunities you're looking at?
Look, I think one thing is consolidation. The industry, especially on the rental and leasing, that is due for consolidation. The market has changed and the traditional things and companies are the way business has been done. You know, it's just no longer going to be sustainable going forward. So believe that this is a real good time for consolidation. The value chain of the mobility sector, you know, from accessing the fleet, yes, maybe there may be shift and significant shift for that matter in the new car business, but it's also an opportunity. It's an opportunity that gives you new car models that are not really yet in South Africa, whether they come from, you know, Japan, India, or across even China. It's just giving us an opportunity to say, look at M&A in a broader way, but also technology. You know, if you look at consolidation, you look at technology, access to vehicle, the whole value chain of mobility is really ripe for us now to really take advantage of it.
Maganda, before I let you go, let's look at that technology in a bit more detail. I mean, from a Zeda perspective, there is a clear drive to pivot the business into having more digital capabilities. Take us through perhaps what that looks like or what that could look like in the future and what that would do for a competitive advantage in a market that is highly competitive already.
You know, a key thing about us is that we want to strive for tailored solution. I think the market has been over the years just giving and treating customer in a general way, that there's no differentiator between one customer or the other, no differentiator from a price point of view, from what really makes you tick, how you want to consume your service. And really, Zeda is pioneering the fact about mobility, not just usership, but tailoring for your need. I mean, iLease, when we introduce it, it's about a flexible way. We keep on saying that, you know, when you buy a vehicle, you're stuck for however months you've signed, whether it's 90 months, 72 months. But with iLease, it's about flexibility. We will still strive. We did a digital dealership for used cars. And people will say, how do you buy used cars if you have not touched it, you have not seen it? And we're seeing the revolution. People are starting to move to say, if I can spend so much, I can spend that much on a used car that I have not seen, but I trust the Avis and the Zeda brand, because if the brand says, trust us, if you don't like it, you will return it, then, you know, we guarantee it and you buy it. And we have seen the market starting to say, we're dealing with a brand with a trust and we're good for our way. If you don't like the vehicle, you bring it back. But whatever we say is the condition of the vehicle, we stand by it. And that's where, you know, the change and the shift in how people consume car sales, you know, rental, the entire usership, and eventually the car sale part is what we are trying to change.
trust governs the auto retail market, and having that trust is what has allowed Zeda Limited to stay ahead of their competitors in this current financial period and possibly into the new financial period. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Zeda Limited, Mayor Ramasela Ganda, for joining us to take a look at their performance over the previous financial year.
What's the secret to turning on success? Easy. The right partnership. With Telkom Business, get solutions that elevate your business. A reliable internet connection that keeps your team on track? Get fiber. An integrated, unified communications tool? Get cloud PABX. Connectivity that keeps up with the fist of rush? Get unlimited LTE.
This summer, your business deserves the best. Visit telkom.co.za/business for deals that grow your business. T's and C's apply. Telkom Business. Possible begins here.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Flip the switch to solar and improve your home's energy efficiency with Luxy, powered by the Standard Bank Group. The solar financing market has really taken off, especially as we transition towards cleaner, more sustainable energy solutions. And to that effect, the team at Luxy have introduced a new offering. We're going to be taking a look at this offering with the executive head of the Luxy platform at Standard Bank South Africa, Mark du Plessis. He joins me on the line now to see if we can make sense of this. Mark, always lovely having you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell me about the home loan offering. What is it, and why did the Luxy team put this together, and how is it different from what's in the market?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jimmy. So Standard Bank Home Services, our home loans business, and Luxy have been working together on how do we put something that is completely bundled into the market. So essentially this offering bundles in the solar solution into the bond application up front. So what this does is essentially helps homes take advantage of the low interest rates that home loans offer to finance their home, of course, and the solar installation in a single finance application. So essentially giving the home an answer to, firstly, lower interest rates, and secondly, helping to spread the repayments of the solar solution along with the home loan for a longer term to repay the home and the solar system.
Mark, what does this mean for consumers? You and I have spoken about some of the short, medium, and long-term benefits of being able to kind of manage how you're paying off your solar solutions and what financing options are available. What does this then mean for the kinds of savings that homeowners might be able to achieve now?
Yeah, so what we've noticed, of course, you know, through almost the last two decades is electricity price hikes have outpaced inflation quite significantly. And of course, household income certainly wouldn't have kept up with this, with probably significantly lower increases in total household income. And what we thought about was to say, well, you know, with this budget pressure that homes are under, installing a solar solution at the beginning of the homeowner journey could certainly protect that home and family from continued and long-term price hikes. Another two items of benefit that we really wanted to focus on was ensuring that what goes into this home will last the lifetime of the home loan itself. So the installation equipment that we're going to be offering to customers has a 20-year warranty across all major components. So the system is guaranteed essentially for the lifetime of most home loans, being around 20 to 25 years. And lastly, also just to, as a sweetener, we're also throwing in a 10,000 rand incentive to customers that they can receive in cash to an account of their choice once the installation has taken place.
Mark, we'll come back to that incentive. I want to get a sense of what this kind of decision potentially does for the property itself. I mean, a lot of people have had the debate around whether or not solar is a luxury. You and I have had the conversation to say that in the economy that we live in, with the pricing that we have on electricity, it's slowly becoming less of a luxury and more of a strategic investment decision. What does installing solar at the time of the purchase they do for the property over the life of the home loan, perhaps?
Yes, so we've noticed in the market there's two major benefits for when customers want to sell their homes. There is some evidence and data in the market that shows a 2-5% increase in property value. But secondly, the saleability of the home and the marketability of the home that already has a solar solution installed certainly helps when buyers are looking at two homes maybe they like, one does have a solar installation and one doesn't. real estate agents have shown evidence that it is easier to sell the home that has a renewable energy installation. Of course, what comes with that is considerable benefit in savings and running costs for the home. So many different opportunities for homes to really double down on making sure that they can afford the home loan, but certainly afford the electricity payments that come with running that home.
Mark, so how do consumers get access to this? You touched on the fact that the solution that you have put forward is already in place. People can get access to it. How do consumers that are interested get hold of this and, more importantly, that incentive?
Yeah, so the LookSee website is open for anyone to go onto. Within our financing options, we have the solar home loan opportunity for customers to read it a little bit more and send in an application. What happens then is our LookSee team works very closely with our home loans team and making sure that home loan application, when the customer is upfront inquired about including the solar system on their home loan, we would work very closely with the internal teams to make sure that the customer gets the benefits. So we would size the system accurately. We would make sure that the affordability for the home is there and the family that they can afford the home loan, of course, as well as the installation that would come. And then on registration, we would go ahead and install the solar system. So when the family moves into their new home, ready to go with free power from the sun.
Mark, what if I've already got an existing home loan, but I would still like to take advantage of the solar solution and the transition to solar? Is this something I can reach out to the LookSee team for help with? And is this something that we can explore even on existing home loans?
Absolutely. So we always encourage homes to inquire on that. Customers can use their existing home loans if there's equity in the home through a re-advance or a further advance. Existing home loan customers can reach out to us. We can facilitate that process. We size the system based on their electricity bill to make sure that we can reduce that bill as much as possible, so that therefore further increasing their affordability and being able to pay back that home loan, including the solar system that's been funded within their home loan.
Whether you have a new or an existing home loan facility, you could potentially benefit from leveraging that facility to greenify your home, so to speak, or to transition your home into a cleaner energy solution. Reach out to the team at LookSee. They've got that sorted for you, and they're ready and willing to help. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thanks so much to Mark du Plessis for those insights and for the time. Executive head of the LookSee platform at Standard Bank South Africa, Mark du Plessis, joining us to take a look at the latest offerings they are bringing to homeowners. This interview was brought to you by LookSee, powered by the Standard Bank Group. Flip the switch to solar and improve your home's energy efficiency with products and services from LookSee.
Welcome to Mzansi, where the vibe is always on, but the lights are off. Where we smile through dark times with the hope of a bright future. Where the grass seems greener on the other side, but we choose to go green here. Where LookSee helps improve your home's energy efficiency through quality products, solutions, and services. Visit lookSee.co.za to learn more about home energy efficiency. Powered by Standard Bank. Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by Nedbank Agribusiness. Think bigger. Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank. It's Agri Tuesday, and this week we're doing things a little differently for our Agri feature. We're going to be celebrating one of our big agricultural victories in the form of a recent crowning of the 7th best vineyard in the world and the 2nd best vineyard in Africa that was recently awarded to the team at Creation Wines. We're going to take a look at their business. We're going to take a look at what it took to win these prizes and what we make of it. I'm joined on the line by the co-founder and marketing director at Creation Wines, Carolyn Martin, to take a look at their business and how they've gotten to where they are today. Carolyn, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. First things first, congratulations on the significant milestone for the business. I can imagine to be placed amongst the best vineyards in the world is no small achievement. How are you and the Creation Wines team feeling?
Oh, I mean, we're absolutely elated. It's you know, thrilling to be ranked as seventh in the world's 50 best vineyards this year. I mean, to be in the top 10 is quite remarkable, especially when you look at the competition from around the world. You know, there's some significant players in that, very famous champagne houses and Riesling producers and fabulous producers from all over the world, from France and Portugal and Chile and Argentina, Australia, everywhere. Yeah.
Carolyn, what inspired the business? Take me through the journey and how it all began.
It's incredible. I mean, when we started here, there was 11 kilometers of gravel road, and still we managed to bring so many visitors to the tasting room to have these beautiful experiences. But it took time, you know, and I think one of the most important things is being available and being open 7 days a week like we are, because it means that people know that you're going to be there for them. And, you know, to start this project, it was a sheep farm 22 years ago, and now we've managed to, it's become a world-class wine estate, and it's due to the amazing foresight that JC had, you know, obviously growing beautiful Pinot Noir and Chardonnay in the Himalayan Arder. It's perfect weather conditions for these cultivars, and it's wonderful to be able to train local people. So we've trained so many sommeliers and International Wine Education Trust graduates. In fact, we've got 5 in training right now in Stellenbosch, but we trained 17 International Wine Education Trust graduates and also 20 sommeliers last year. And we, for us, it's about how do we reinvest in the community? And those people go out into the world and they buy our wines and start to sell our wines. A great example is a young man who started his wine career at Creation, and now he actually has trained 2,000 people in the Maldives in wine, and those people will be selling our wine. Isn't that amazing?
Carolyn, let's take a look at the competition itself. I mean, ranking the 50 best vineyards in the world, I can imagine, is something that every vineyard strives to be part of and to achieve. But not only that, to rank as high as you did is a mark of excellence that I imagine something that you've been working towards for many years.
Yeah, I think we've been working on this for the last 22 years. And I think what's incredible is, you know, how the list is curated by hundreds of international wine, travel and hospitality experts. But the most important thing is it not only recognizes the quality of the wines, but also the entire experience from the biodiversity we have here at Creation. You know, we WWF champions, to the beautiful art we always have. Once a year, we change our art installations with local artists. It's about the food from the region, so how we celebrate our food culture here. 80% of our ingredients come from within 80 kilometers of Creation. And I don't know if you know, but in our region, we were listed as a UNESCO Creative City of Gastronomy in 2019, and that is about the incredibly pristine environment in which we grow our vineyards and the wonderful foods that we have here, the beautiful cheeses and amazing olive oils and butter from Botrophir, and, you know, there's so many things, all the ancient grains that we have here. We have the best sweet potatoes in South Africa grown in Napier close to us. So there are lots of fantastic products that we can work with in our region. And it's also not only about that, but it's about the whole concept of Creation and our story about wellness from the vineyards and the work that we do with scientists right through to our community and to the team that work with us, and then how we actually present that to the guests. So when you come to visit us, you have a fabulous wine and food pairing, but it's all about how the guest feels when they leave. And that's about that's got to do with, you know, having a fantastic anti-inflammatory food and wine pairing and just a beautiful experience. So it's about the joy of wine and food and the community that we uplift here.
Carolyn, what inspired you and the rest of the team at Creation Wines to pursue such a high level of excellence? Owning a vineyard is one thing, but then taking that vineyard and saying, we would like to compete on a global scale at the highest level of quality, is that something that was there from the onset, or did that just come along the way? You realized that you had the ability to achieve this and you went after it?
I think, you know, I am. We both, Jesse, Jean-Claude, my husband, whose vision it was to actually start Creation, and my vision, we both come from wine families. We've both grown up in the wine industry, Jean-Claude in Switzerland and myself in South Africa. And we've grown up in families where it was about how do we take the community and create this excellence in everything that we do, from the viticultural work that we do right through to the winemaking process and then, you know, into the kitchen. And how do we deliver that exceptional experience to the wonderful guests that come to visit us? You know, because they come, we have a lot of local guests, but we also have guests coming from all around the world to visit us. And we just have this real pride in our sense of place. And of course, this is what wine is about. You know, they talk about terroir, but it's really about how do we blend, you know, art, science, our people, our sense of place, and how do we share that with our guests? And we love doing this. So for us, it's, you know, creating immersive wine and food pairing experiences and really nature focused experiences. I mean, the name Creation is all about how do we work together with nature, you know, and it's also about the place where we're from, the Himmlischen Erde, which aptly translates in English into the place of heaven and earth. And we want to share that. It's such a beautiful place. And I think we have so much to offer in South Africa. And one of the most beautiful things about our offering in South Africa is our people, you know, and the warmth of hospitality that we have here and the capacity to deliver such beautiful work from an artisanal point of view, you know, whether it's the handcrafted work that we do in the vineyards or the food that we bring to the table and the combination of the wine and the food.
Carolyn, what's this going to do for the business's confidence going into your upcoming productions, your upcoming seasons? Wine is such a passionate business to get into, and some years are better than others, some years are tougher than others, and putting in the hard hours when it is tough only to come out of it the other side ranked as highly as you are in the world. What does that mean for the team taking this forward?
I think our goal is not to, you know, it's not just to remain in the global top 10. It's really to help position South Africa as one of the world's leading fine wine and wine tourism destinations. And that is the main intention that we have. And besides that, it's really, we are so focused on our clients. You know, we absolutely, it's about how do we become one of the world's most loved wine estates in the world? So how do we look after our customers so that they truly appreciate the culture of agriculture and the joy and, you know, what this brings to the community to work in agriculture and how wine is brought to the table? So for us, it's really about, it's about creating those connections, which are so powerful.
Carolyn, what would you say to other wineries in South Africa that see the achievements that Creation Wines has been able to attain, that see what is possible on the global stage and that might be wondering, how do I get my winery or my vineyard to that level? What would you say to them?
I think what's really important is, you know, we have an opportunity to create a really sustainable business, not only from sustainable agricultural point of view, but also in terms of sustainable leadership. And the most interesting thing for us is when we work in this industry, to actually bring people to see our place and where we make the wine and to meet the people is really critical. And wine tourism is 10% of world tourism, but not only that, I think so many of our wine sales come from our tasting room. You know, we know that about 30% of our sales are directly from the cellar door, where people walk out with a bottle of the wine that they've chosen. But that doesn't only happen just at the cellar door. People go home to wherever they are in South Africa or around the world, and then they find our wine on wine lists in top gastronomy, or they actually want to order our wine and they are able to do it in their local shops. So I think from a business point of view, wine tourism is where Wine South Africa can really, you know, do so well, because people want to relive those memories. They want to remember the place that they came to, where they were in the heart and the home of the brand. And I would just like to say, please make a reservation at reservations@creationwines.com, and also find us on the R320 between Hermanus and Caledon, and we are just off the N2 or off the R43 up the Himalayanada Road.
Folks, the next time you are looking for the very best wine to either gift to a friend, to try for yourself, to celebrate with, don't take it from us. Take it from the experts that have ranked Creation Wines as amongst the very best wine vineyards in the entire world. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Another congratulations to the team at Creation Wines. Thanks so much to the co-founder marketing director, Carolyn Martin, for joining us to tell us more about what it is that they're doing and how it is that they're achieving such great success. This feature was brought to you by Nedbank Agribusiness. Think bigger, think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank.
What if a bank didn't just finance your farm, but helped you grow it? Nedbank Agribusiness offers more than just financial solutions. Our experts provide deep industry insights to help you identify opportunities and risks within your business earlier. Agriculture evolves, and so do we. We stay connected to industry stakeholders and the latest research, ensuring your business thrives on every hectare. So when you think growth, think bigger. Think Nedbank Commercial Banking. See money differently. Nedbank, we're a licensed FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Some time ago on the show, we took a look at the developments between the taxi industry and the bus industry, especially where it related to long trips or long distance trips. There was a court order, a court interdict. All of those other developments happened. We're going to get an update on that and get a sense of where we stand now and whether or not this has been resolved. I'm joined on the line by the Chief Executive Officer at Intercape, Johan Ferreira, to take a look at what's been happening and where we go from here. Johan, lovely to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. When we last spoke, there was a lot of tension between the bus industry and the taxi industry, and there was a lot that needed to be resolved. Where do we stand today?
Well, we are now sitting on interdict number 10. And basically every interdict says the same. The police must protect, they must escort, they must arrest. And they're not doing any of those. So, you know, how can we expect crime to be resolved in South Africa if the perpetrators are attacking the bus, the passengers, the safety, you know, the safety officers in front of the police station, and then the police ran away? You know, that's what happened on the 19th of November. That's why we went to court. So the whole of Norval was brought to a still stand with trucks that was hijacked, parked across the road. There was truckloads of bricks and stones offloaded in the middle of the road. So the road was completely blocked. So this is anarchy. It's nothing less than anarchy. And, you know, the police... We wrote to the National Police Acting Minister, Charlia. We've not heard from him. So the last court interdict is against the National Police Commissioner, the Provincial Police Commissioner, and specifically the Station Commander of Norval. So that's where we're at.
Johan, what kind of resolution are we looking for here? We've spoken about the fact that in the past that the courts have mandated that the police get involved, and you've reiterated that here. What would be an alternative in the event that that doesn't happen? Or have we had conversations with the taxi industry, sitting down with them? I understand that, of course, as you said, some of the conversations go against Competition Commission regulations, but what other alternative measures have you looked at?
No, the law does not allow for competitors to cooperate and to create a cartel. Well, how can I do that? How can ShopRite, Checkers, and Woolworths and all of them sit together and negotiate on products and, you know, who's going to open a shop where? And, you know, you can't open a shop. You can only have 5 shops. No, you can have 2 shops. I'll open there. No, you don't. It doesn't work that way, but that's how the taxi industry works. Mm. But we can see the taxi wars. You know, those things doesn't last.
Johan, what about alternative routes? Is there the possibility to even look at that, whether it's from the taxi side or from the bus side? How are the routes looking like? Are there enough routes even available to say that we can share the routes?
look, I operate a luxury bus service. These guys operate taxis. It's not even the same industry. Okay, a taxi is a glorified car, motor car. It's got a motor car engine, a motor car diff, and a motor car gearbox. A bus costs 10 million rand. A taxi costs 750 or a million rand. So it is a different industry, and the law makes provision for that kind of regulated transport. So we don't live in a banana republic. We these things have been well thought through. There has to be a proper transport system. We can't, as operators, decide the fate of an industry and a country. There are laws, and the laws must be adhered to. And as long as I'm in my right to operate a service, why must I be chased out of a town or a province, or South Africa for that matter? We've been here since the inception of intercity services, since 1986. So today, I must hear I'm not welcome. For 50 years, I've been doing this. Now today, I must hear I'm not welcome.
Johan,
why?
Johan, before
because
we...
somebody just... say so.
Yeah, Johan, before we run out of time, I want to get a sense of what this is doing from a financial perspective on the business. I mean, surely operating routes and operating buses is not a cheap exercise. I imagine it would be similar to the taxi industry. Nothing that we do in this world comes for free. But the longer you have these disruptions, I imagine the more detrimental it becomes towards the business.
No, it will. But, you know, COVID didn't kill us. I'm sure this one won't either.
Well, all the best to you, Johan. Please keep us updated around what is happening there. And if you are able to find a resolution, we'll keep an eye on this story and see how it continues to develop. For now, though, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Chief Executive Officer of Intercape, Johan Ferreira, for joining us to take a look at the latest developments between the taxi industry and the bus industry and how they are resolving their concerns.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
That's the show for today, folks. We will be back tomorrow, but just a gentle reminder, we will not have our show on the Thursday. We will be having the SAFM annual lecture, of course, that you would want to tune into for that. So there'll be a build-up towards that lecture where we would usually have our show. So for this Thursday, we will not be having the show, which means we'll wrap up the week tomorrow. We'll look at some of the outstanding matters related to markets and other developments tomorrow. See if we can get you that update on what was happening with the update AGOA agreement proposals out of the US and where that leaves South Africa if that does go ahead. But for right now, it is coming up to 7 o'clock, which means Greg Host is standing by to give us the latest round of evening news. He'll be followed by Michael Abramson with the latest in top sport updates. From my side, good night.